Hello, I'm Dr. Bill Nelson, director of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins, and you're listening to the launch of our podcast series that will focus on the revolutionary technological advances and treatment breakthroughs that are happening here, straight from the people that are making them happen. You're invited to come along on our journey to one day, we hope, cure cancer in all of its forms. Today, we're starting off by talking with Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe. She's the Deputy Director of the Kimmel Cancer Center and the Associate Director of the Bloomberg Kimmel Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy. Liz and I spoke at the American Association for Cancer Research annual meeting in Chicago, where she has just ascended to the presidency for the upcoming year. We discussed her goals as the incoming president, leading the organization, and the types of new research that we're seeing at this meeting. So we're here at the American Association for Cancer Research annual scientific meeting, along with 22,000 of the world's cancer researchers. And we have right here, we have Elizabeth Jaffe, who's about to be sworn in as the president of the entire organization. And Liz, what's it like to take over the reins of all of cancer research?
Thanks, Bill. It's very overwhelming, but it's exciting at the same time. We're really at a time like no other in cancer research, and to be able to be the president of this important organization, it's the largest cancer research organization in the world. It's overwhelming but very exciting, and the opportunities are just endless.
Well, I know one thing that's a lot of fun at this meeting is to really get a sense in the presentations and the discussions in the hallways and in the hotel lobbies and the like about what are the hottest things going on in cancer research right now. One of them, of course, is this explosion of interest, excitement, and new data coming through in cancer immunotherapy. This is the idea where the immune cells in the body, the same ones that can fight off infections and the like, are marshaled to go attack cancers, having successes like never before. You are a cancer immunotherapist driving this revolution. What are you seeing at this meeting that's new, interesting, and that surprised you?
Well, you know, there's so many things going on at this meeting. For instance, there are more phase three clinical trials being presented in immunotherapy and combination immunotherapy. So for the first time, we're going to start to see more combinations, and not just of the drugs that have been approved in the past, but new drugs that are targeting new pathways on T cells, on macrophages in the tumor microenvironment, and combinations of immunotherapy with targeted therapy. So I'm really excited to participate in some of these sessions and also attend these sessions to hear what the latest developments are.
Well, one thing, of course, that always seems to be true is when we get brand new treatments, they're very often explored first in people who've had other treatments that have not been successful, are really at the end of their rope in terms of their prospects to have a treatment benefit them, and then the new treatment is tested in that setting. And of course, we're always just intensely gratified when there's a benefit in that setting. But very often the next step, even after they're approved in that setting, is to integrate them into the kind of treatment structures and treatment combinations that we know work, at least to some degree. And how rapidly is this going to occur? It does look like the immunotherapy is going to benefit a lot of people, particularly when used earlier, along with radiation surgery, chemotherapy, targeted therapy, and the like. How's that going to play out?
Bill, that's a great question. I think that's really the next step of where we're headed. And in fact, at this meeting, we will be hearing about neoadjuvant immunotherapy studies that are working, where they're shrinking tumors just with immunotherapy before patients undergo surgery and lung cancer. And in fact, one study comes from Johns Hopkins, and that study will be published in the New England Journal of Medicine in the next month. So we're all very excited about integrating with surgery, and this has been going on for a while, but to see cancers regress before surgery with immunotherapy alone is definitely novel. I am concerned a little bit about combining immunotherapy with chemotherapy. We really have to do this in a scientifically rational way. The next step should not be just to combine immunotherapies with current chemotherapies that have some effect, but to really learn how best to do that. Is it sequential? Is it concurrent? Are there dose reductions in the chemotherapy that need to be done? So these are questions that I think we'll start to see studies looking at, and I hope that we will find that there will be ways in which we can successfully combine them. Same thing goes for radiation therapy. What's also interesting, as you point out, is Can we move immunotherapies earlier? So not only are we moving them to the neoadjuvant setting, but as we'll learn from a couple of the studies being presented at this meeting, we'll learn that immunotherapy can be given to new metastatic disease and do better than chemotherapy is first line. Well, for patients, that's wonderful because chemotherapy is a lot more difficult in many cases for patients to handle. The side effects that are acute could be very disruptive to their lives, whereas the side effects from immunotherapy are much more easy to tolerate, and patients can go about their normal day without having significant side effects from the immunotherapy.
So you mentioned one thing. So often when new anti-cancer treatments are developed, they're administered to patients, and the physicians and scientists trying to assess how these treatments works are really flying in a foggy kind of environment, because the tools that they have to see how effective things are is, did the tumor shrink on a scan or the like? And you mentioned this tendency to explore these new immunotherapies in this neoadjuvant, that means before the surgery, for instance. And so you can assess every detail of the tumor, every cell that's present, whether it's an immune cell, a cancer cell, a support structure cell, like a new blood vessel cell. And we can use some of our incredible technologies that we see all throughout this meeting as well, genome sequencing, detection of exactly which proteins are made and how. How do you see this playing out? Is this where genome sequencing and all these technologies for measuring single molecules and what they do, is this going to be a major vehicle that improves immunotherapy? I don't think people were mixing those things together before the last couple of years.
That's also a great question, and certainly I like to say that genetics and immunotherapy are now a happy marriage for moving immunotherapy into the clinics. and I use that because it's really the understanding the genetics that has helped us to develop better immunotherapies. And in fact, patients with high mutation burdens where their tumors have many mutations, we're talking about hundreds to thousands and not just 20 to 50 mutations. These are the patients who respond. There's recently a publication from us showing that we can actually better define the mutation numbers. So a minimum of 10 mutations per megabase will actually imply that a patient's tumor may respond much better to immunotherapy than if their mutation burden is lower than that. Yet another study is showing that it's really the mutation burden and not whether these tumors express specific immune signals on their tumor, such as PD-L1. It's really the mutation burden that may predict who will respond to immunotherapy. So we have to start to better understand how the genetics is linked to the immunotherapy responses.
Well, along with these incredible measurement technologies, genome sequencing, the ability to analyze a lot of things going on in a single cell and the like, there's also been some conceptual advances. Instead of just thinking about what we can possibly discern about a cancer as a lesion following on an x-ray, we're now thinking about cancer cells in the tumor microenvironment influenced by immune cells, almost like a particular species in a habitat influenced by a predator or something like that. And this has engaged a whole new collection of researchers that we're starting to see at this kind of meeting. These people tend to come from mathematical sciences, computational biology, thinking about evolutionary theory, physicists and the like. And this has prompted a lot of discussion about this notion of convergence. How do we bring biological sciences together with physical sciences? I think years ago you could argue they didn't even speak the same language, but now that they do, I think almost everyone is excited that there are a lot of things that we can learn about human biology, about disease biology, and how to better treat folks by engaging this sector of researchers. This has been called convergence. It's a term that Phil Sharp had launched a number of years ago. It started to have funding steered at it here and there, and one of your plans, I hope I don't give away anything about your inaugural address or anything, but one of your plans I know is going to be to help maneuver the American Association for Cancer Research, the largest such organization, into the game of really supporting this convergence type of research by granting mechanisms, publications, all. Can you talk about any of that yet?
Good point. Yes, I'm very passionate, as you're pointing out, about convergence science. I think that really the next advances are going to come from engaging experts in all sectors of basic and translational science and bringing them together. We're very interested at the ACR in trying to formalize programs, as you pointed out, try to identify funding mechanisms that would bring teams together, possibly have problem-solving symposia that would bring groups together and in real time, real stories that are happening now, try to help solve these problems that biologists are having in moving progress in cancer research further. We also want to increase the workforce. I think one of the problems right now is trying to find the right individuals who want to dedicate their expertise towards cancer research. Computational biology in particular is one where we really have to compete with all of these high-tech companies, and we have to figure out ways to encourage these young computational biology students and postdocs to want to apply their expertise to cancer research. So I think we're going to convene a think tank and invite experts like yourself and Phil Sharp and others to help us identify possible ways in which to solve these problems.
Well, it does seem like, just looking at that, sort of information science broadly has completely transformed many industries, and with many positives and some things that we are concerned about. We're thinking a lot about that with the internet companies, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no denying the transformative effect they've had on the way certain businesses were conducted, certain enterprises were conducted. For healthcare, it's been very difficult in patient care to see great benefit. We have electronic medical records, and we can sort of see out in the future that as we collect more data that's more accessible, we can learn more about it to help the next patient who comes through the door. But these have been hard. It's been a difficult transformation for the industry of healthcare and cancer care also. The genetics and epigenetics and all the measurements we're doing scientifically have naturally fit into this group. And I wonder if we may hopefully, as you say, train the next generation and really bring all of these things together in a much more productive way. But this information science, which has not traditionally been a cancer researcher, how are you going to engage that person?
Wow, tough question, Bill. In fact, I was going to come talk to you about it after this meeting. No,
I can add and subtract, but that's about it for me.
No, it's a tough problem because there are a number, and what's exciting is that there are a number of companies that, technology companies, that are getting into the game. And they can do this a lot better and faster than we can. And I don't believe in silos. I believe in trying to engage these folks. One concern would be that they're doing it for profit, and obviously the ACR and academia, we're nonprofit. So we have to figure out a way that will benefit companies and also benefit academia, government, and ultimately patients. And that is something I'm just not sure yet how it's going to work. But my goal as president of ACR is to try and convince these companies to share their abilities with us and to understand that we have a lot to bring to the table too, as scientists, as clinical researchers, and as clinical caregivers.
Well, I think that my sense is that our field is really ready for this, and I think you see it reflected in the American Association for Cancer Research membership and the folks who come here to the meeting. You and I have talked a number of times about team science and how do you bring together areas of deep expertise where people traditionally have not interacted, have not spoken with each other, people with great technical capabilities who don't really know what a cancer is, people who deeply understand cancer but don't understand the technology, and how can you bring them together to be a productive team? Well, now you have 22,000, and again, if you walk down the hallway, you now have structural biologists, medicinal chemists, people who do animal modeling, people who do computational biology, all these gathered in this meeting. So this is going to be a first step. Can the American Association for Cancer Research, while you're president, start to bring this even closer together?
Yes, absolutely. And that is a goal, to try to engage more of these individuals, to convene meetings. In fact, we have one meeting already on the books, a convergence science meeting that will convene some of these people. So I think this is happening already. I think we need to just take it to the next level at the AACR. And the hope is that we'll be able to bring more of these individuals into the organization, because we have something to offer. And I think we do. I think we're at a time in cancer research like no other. We have the ability to make real impact in patients. And if, you know, that has to be the guiding principle. And I think that all of these individuals, if we can articulate where we are, some of them may not understand where we are in cancer research right now. If we can articulate the opportunities that are available, I think we'll be able to engage more individuals into this field.
So the last question I have for you is, I'm sure you walk around with your cell phone and counts the number of steps that you've taken today. Is it 10x the number that you usually take?
Yes, I'm pretty busy, and I bought special running shoes for this. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm just honored to be able to serve as president of the AACR for 2018 through 19.
That was Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe, our associate director of the Bloomberg Kimmel Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy here at Johns Hopkins, and the new president of the American Association for Cancer Research. Their website is aacr.org, and you can follow her at aacrpres on Twitter. Please also follow both of our accounts on Twitter, at Hopkins Kimmel and at Bloomberg Kimmel. Thank you for listening.